Life sections of the Kuzari. And in the concluding part of this section, really the tail end, we're about to finish today, so he came at a very opportune moment, he discusses three very important concepts. Number one, Olam Haba. Number two, Schar and Onesh. Number three, suffering of the Jewish people in history. So let's see if we can unwind this as quickly as possible. There are two problems that we classically face when thinking about Olam Haba and Schar V'Onesh. Number one is, do we care about Schar V'Onesh? Antigonus Ishsocho told us we shouldn't be like some servant who doesn't see the integrity of religion and only wants to receive a pras. We should sense an inner integrity to Torah. And even if we knew there weren't an Olam Haba, and even if we knew there weren't Schar, Antigonus told us we should be of the Hashem because we see it as the most impressive and dignified lifestyle. So that's how we... And yet the Torah is full of Schar. Parshas Bechukosa. The second problem is that the Schar in Parshas Bechukosa is not Olam Haba. Schar in Parshas Bechukosa, if you follow Kodesh Baruch Hu's mitzvos, you'll receive rainfall, you'll defeat your enemies, you'll live in the land with security, you'll have material success. So those are the two classic questions of Schar V'Onesh in Judaism. Number one, why is it so important to us? Number two, we think there'd be something more. One could claim that one of the failures that leads to the destabilization of Islam is that its Olam Haba, its endpoint, its telos, is physical pleasure and indulgences and food and wine and women. And that's the end of religion. Yet if we reach Bechukosai, it seems that way. So the Rambam solves it one way in the end of Hilchos Tshuva. But for the Kuzari, the solution is as follows. And it relates to something we spoke about yesterday. Prophecy and surpassing or metaphysical behavior are the two parts that the Jews were selected for. We're not smarter than other nations. Our blood isn't redder. Our DNA isn't different. But we have two capacities that Hashem chose us for. One is to receive His word, Nevuah, and one is to operate above nature and above the typical laws of politics and nature that govern most nations. We can build a state in 75 years. It takes others a couple hundred years to build. That's how the Jewish people operate. And we said yesterday that when a Navi experiences the word of Hashem, it doesn't just impact him, it impacts everyone in his surrounding, because it's a trailer for Olam Haba, it's a promo for Olam Haba. You see the body separating from the soul, and soul no longer withheld from the body, being able to receive Hashem's word, even in a different language, according to the Kuzari. It's not even clear that in Har Sinai Hashem spoke dozen languages. It was some other sensory experience that transcended language, because language is a bodily experience. And language is framed by body experience, by physical experiences. See, the more abstract the language, a Navi's ability to separate conceptually from the inhibitions and the limitations of his body. That's a preview of Olam Haba. So Nevuah previews Olam Haba, and they both represent living with HaKadosh Baruch Hu, or living by the selection of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So we're not interested in Schar because we want to be rewarded. That's why we were chosen, to experience this unique phenomena called Nevuah, which means the body separating from the soul, which everyone will have in Olam Haba, endlessly and infinitely. So it's not Schar as much as it is fulfilling our mission, fulfilling our challenge, fulfilling why we were chosen. We're chosen because we could receive the word of Hashem. In this world, we're inhibited to receive the word of Hashem by the physical world, by moral flaws, by the physical limitations. Once in a while, you see people transcending those limitations, but that demonstrates what everyone will jointly experience in Olam Haba, which is why Hashem chose us. So we're not looking for Schar out of self-indulgence or self-interest, but that's why we're chosen, to feel Hashem's presence. That also explains to the Kuzari why Bechukosai speaks about physical success, rainfall, military triumph, tranquility in the land. There's no logical reason that mitzvah should lead to rainfall. There's no logical mitzvah that mitzvah no logical reason that mitzvah should lead to physical prosperity, material prosperity. It's because it's demonstrating that we're Hashem's people. And other nations, to have rainfall, they'd have to irrigate. Other nations, to have military success, they'd have to arm themselves exorbitantly. But for the Jewish people, once you fulfill mitzvahs and you search for HaKadosh Baruch Hu, then all of the blessings, it's not because we want material success, it's because that's reflective of why we were chosen. We were chosen to demonstrate to the world Hashem's presence. How do you demonstrate Hashem's presence? Leading a supernatural, metaphysical life, where material success isn't a product of material investment, but it's a product of spiritual success. So we're not looking for the success per se of Bechukosai or the success per se of Olam Haba. We're looking to fulfill the two reasons we were chosen. It's called in Kuzari, Inyan Eloki. The Inyan Eloki is part of two factors. A, metaphysical experience. Our success is not bred based on material investment. B, receiving Hashem's word, Olam Haba, the ultimate Nevuah as a promo. Think of it as a triangle. Nevuah, Olam Haba, material success, not based on material investment. Those are the three axes of the Inyan Eloki, the fact that Hashem chose us. Nevuah, Olam Haba, which is an extension of Nevuah, and supernatural metaphysical success. That's what he talks about Olam Haba. It's a very, very famous piece. Then he talks about Schar V'Onesh. The Khuzar king is a little bit skeptical of philosophy, because in philosophy, only philosophers survive. Anyone who's not a philosopher, who hasn't developed their intellect, has no Olam Haba, because Olam Haba constitutes the decimation of the physical body, or the decay of the physical body, and the intellect is that which survives. So if philosophers have developed their intellect, they survive, but no one else receives Olam Haba. That seems very elitist and very dismissive towards. And then he's a little bit dismissive of Islam, that you can lead your life in a morally degenerate fashion, without any moral interest, without any religious lifestyle, but the second you die, if you accept Muhammad's prophecy, then you receive Olam Haba. It doesn't make sense that you should be rewarded so extravagantly just for one little statement. And then he prods Yehuda Levi in the voice of the Chavrut, saying, yes, but in Judaism, you're right, there's nothing vicarious about Olam Haba, and everyone can receive Olam Haba as opposed to the philosophers, and everyone receives Schar, even Rishayim, for whatever actions, because the Kodesh Baruch Hu is absolutely exact and precise, and it's not as if, oh, you've led your entire life in a certain lifestyle, and then towards the end of a life, you reform, then Hashem ignores that. Hashem acknowledges that, of course, not something as vicarious and artificial as a verbal proclamation, but some turn of the heart, HaKadosh Baruch Hu will accept. Which leads us to the conclusion. At the tail end of this first mamar, the king asks the Khuzari, so you've made an interesting point. Olam Haba is reflective of Olam Hazeh, because Nevuah is a trailer for this endless spiritual world in which there's no body inhibiting that interaction with the Kodesh Baruch Hu. So you can detect Olam Haba and Olam Hazeh. So maybe you should be able to detect Olam Hazeh in Olam Haba, because it's symmetrical, because the two worlds are joined. So how come the Jews are so downtrodden? If the Jews are meant to be uniquely selected to receive HaKadosh Baruch Hu's word, then how come the Jews in Olam Haba, and in Olam Haba they have some burst of encountering HaKadosh Baruch Hu without those physical limitations, why in Olam Haza do the Jews suffer so much? So he isn't asking the question, the classic question about Jewish history, he isn't asking the question from a political standpoint or historical standpoint, he's asking it from a theological standpoint. The two worlds are really reflective, and Olam Haba is already sensed in Olam Hazeh, well then Olam Hazeh, the Jews really aren't receiving the type of successes that you'd expect of them. At which point he says two very interesting things. He says, first of all, look at Christianity. This is Rabbi Dalevi speaking to the Chavar. Look at Muslim. It's built in that if you are a religious reformer, if you are a religious revolutionary, and you want to change people's mind and challenge them to religious higher ground and challenge paganism and challenge them to a higher form of monotheism, which is more difficult, you're going to suffer for it. Initially, the Christians suffered. The Romans persecuted the Christians. The Romans crucified the Christians. The Romans threw them to the lions. Initially, Muhammad and his followers were persecuted, were discriminated against. He says it's built into history that if you are a whistleblower religiously, you're trying to inspire people to a more difficult brand of religion, people will hate you for it. Paganism is relatively simple. Paganism is luxury. Paganism is control over the idols. Paganism is bribing the idols for human interests. The entire hierarchy of monotheism shifts. Paganism is man, Pharaoh stands on the Nile. What can the Nile do for me? Because in paganism, God serves men. Men can bribe. They're stronger than man, but they can be bribed for human interests. In monotheism, man serves God. A man is on, Yaakov's on the bottom of the totem pole of the ladder. He's supposed to power standing on the Nile. So this is my elaboration of the Khuzari. So he says, don't see this as aberrant that the Jews are persecuted, because we're continuing to challenge people to monotheism. So of course we're going to be discriminated against. Of course we're going to be hated, because we're demanding more of the world. And he says, and if the Jews would be willing to accept that as part of their fate, then Mashiach would come sooner. If Jews would realize that the suffering and the struggles they're enduring are not just random or circumstantial, but they're built into whom we are, we're doing it for HaKadosh Baruch Hu's presence, then Mashiach would come sooner than it would otherwise come. He says we still get schar for bearing that weight, but if we bore the weight with a consciousness that reflected our historical mission, then history would be a little bit more accelerated. So these are three points he makes. Number one, Olam Haba is the augmentation of what you see in Nevuah. we're not interested in it per se because of our own luxury, but we want to receive Hashem's word and encounter HaKadosh Baruch Hu more than we are able to in this world with its inhibitions and limitations. The material success in Olam Hazeh is also reflective of our special station. And we demonstrate, we're not interested in the rainfall per se, we're interested in what it demonstrates about those who are selected to live with HaKadosh Baruch Hu, that we're not subject and privy to natural laws, but we live above nature and above history. Number two is that everyone receives schar, not just the philosophers, world version of Olam Haba, and not just these vicarious statements, but any good deed, any activity, no matter if it's offset by a lifetime of moral reprobate and moral deterioration, still receives schar. Finally, the suffering of religious people in this world is built into people that challenge others religiously. The Jews are perennially challenging humanity. Since you're here, I'll tell you, Rav Amital is the founder of this yeshiva. So Rav Amital would always tell us a famous story of Mendela, who would wake up the entire shtetl for Chodesh Elul. That was his job, and he was merciless. He dragged people out of bed, and he poured water on them, and he tickled their feet, and he pulled them out of bed. And when it came time for Erev Rosh Hashanah, Mendel was exhausted. So everyone, and he was falling asleep during Slichos. So everyone took the little papers, and they crumpled them up, and they threw it at Mendel to wake him up. Wake up, Mendel, and wake up, and we'll stop sleeping. And he looked at them all delirious, and he said, I'm so exhausted, can't you let me sleep? I'm just so tired, what's with you? And they all looked at him and said, Mendel, you kept us awake all Chodesh Elul. You think we're going to let you go to sleep now? So Rav Amital told us that we're the Mendel of the world shtetl. We kept the world awake for 2,000 years, and now it's Rosh Hashanah. And we want to go to sleep in our country. And they're all to say, Mendel, you kept us awake for 2,000 years. You didn't let us fall to moral chaos. You didn't let us fall to theological confusion. You challenged us. We hated you for it, because you kept us awake. And now you just want to go to sleep in your country. Quietly, it's Rosh Hashanah, the end of history, the new era. You just want to go to sleep in your country. And things like that kind of wake us up. It's not because of the fact that we challenge the world, but it's built into religion. And I keep telling you, though this is a sefer that has a very, very parochial status for the Jews, it has a very universal feel. It's very hard to convey to you unless you've read the sefer, but it talks about Am HaNifchar, and it talks about the Jews almost being a different species. There's rocks, and there's growing items that are alive, and items that are mobile, animals, items that speak, and then there are Jewish people. So it sounds very parochial, very nationalistic, but its tonality is very universalistic about he's concerned with the universe, he's concerned with all of humanity, he's concerned with history, and he's willing to grant credit to Christianity and Islam, as they were people that challenged the world towards monotheism, and for that they were hated. Okay, Mirtz Hashem, I don't know what we'll do tomorrow, because I don't know if we want to start the second mom, or maybe we'll talk a little bit about Talmud Torah leading up, but maybe we'll learn Hilchos Talmud Torah of the Rambam, and each day we'll learn a little bit of Talmud Torah of the Rambam. Yeah, welcome back, Austin, welcome to the Shiva. Which part of London are you from?
From the middle of a mile away from Iraqi combination.